Bro, what's up?
Dude, just watching the dating game.
Right on. Hey, dude, guess what tonight?
What?
Pool party, my house.
Yeah!
Welcome to Pool Party Radio. This is the podcast where we deal with you nerds later. I'm your host, Parker, joined as always by Jason, Razor Babes Frizzbabe, of course with his new theme music. From Pluto to Uranus, we underground famous for doom. A 808 bass booms in your face.
That's right, I'm in your face, guys. I'm in your face.
You're in our face.
Okay.
You're underground famous as well.
I don't know what that means.
I don't think anybody does, really.
Okay. All right, as long as I'm not missing out on some other term, that's fine. At least it's not a euphemism for anything else.
It could be.
Oh, God.
I'll look it up on songmeanings.com.
Indeed. Well, this is a very special episode. It's our third round of Saved by the Bell, and we have a very special guest, Rhea, or otherwise known as Rhea D, from the Badland Girls at badlandgirls.com and on iTunes.
Yeah, I'm also on iTunes.
Yeah, I said that first part, and I was like, she probably said the second part first, but yeah.
That's okay.
A podcast that we both appreciate very, very much and encourage everybody to check out. We love it. It's the Badland Girls, and you cover... Well, tell us a little bit about what you cover, because I could go on and on.
We cover a lot of shit. There.
Well,
no, like movies and music and general ramblings about junk culture. Me and Destiny. BadlandGirls.com.
Indeed. And you have some awesome guests. Come on, some...
Like us.
Yeah!
And great local comedians as well. It's a lot of fun, and you're taking the act to the stage lately, too, which is also very cool.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's cool.
Look at Mr. Frisbee over here, hosting it up, introducing guests. I love it.
I'm just a big nerd for their show, so yeah, I'm in their face, just like the theme music suggests. I'm in their face with hard-hitting questions.
That's understandable, but yeah, like you said, this is the big... The big Saved by the Bell Season 3 extravaganza. This is something we do from time to time. You know, if you're a fan of the show, you might know that. We did it on Episode 10 and Episode 69, I believe. LOL.
That is a great joke.
And, not really so much a joke. I just added LOL to something funny.
That was a great laugh out loud.
And, yeah, we're doing Season 3 now. This is something that's very fun. At least I like doing it. And I think Jason Frisbee tolerates it.
This season, yes. Every other season, I actually enjoyed it. And, you know, we kind of did this to not just get nostalgic, but to just re-examine, like, why was this show so popular? And what were some of the storylines? Do we even remember them correctly or accurately? At least that was it for my case. I mean... Catching some of this in syndication in the 90s, there's a lot that I missed and a lot that I didn't realize was just, oof, pretty rough, as well, I'm sure we'll discuss for Season 3 here.
Yeah, Season 3 is by far the most offensive and absurd season yet.
And if you wish to follow along after hearing these rave reviews, you can on Netflix, except on Netflix, it'll show up as Season 4, and it starts off with Season 4, Episode 1, which is actually Season 3, Episode 1, as we'll go forward here with, The Fabulous Belding Boys.
You're really on top of things today with this segue right into things. This is great.
Oh, appreciate that.
The new theme song is doing wonders for you, man.
I'm in the face of this podcast. Thanks, Rhea, for suggesting it.
It's new
theme. You're very welcome.
Normally, I'm real spiteful about getting theme music, and I always think it's some weird joke, but I trust you. I trust you with this, and I trust that it's helping me be a better host on the show.
I can tell it's really helped your self-esteem.
Well, now that you said that, I totally disagree. This is, I'm seeing through your ruse, sir.
Well, just trying to help out. But like Mr. Frisbee said, the first episode is The Fabulous Belding Boys. Mr. Belding, the principal of the school, if you haven't heard of the show or seen it before, his younger and hipper brother, who is a substitute teacher, he shows up and breaks most of the rules to get on the kids' good side. This episode is totally weird because, you know, we never knew that Belding had a brother. Not that I guess we would, as it's not like his private life is so much in the show too much. But I immediately thought, why won't Mr. Belding hook his brother up with a full-time job? Why is his brother a substitute teacher? Mr. Belding seems like a dick. And then 2 seconds later, it's revealed that his younger brother, Rod, I believe his name is a total butthole. He doesn't care about the rules, and his big plan is to take a bunch of teenagers across state lines and do something terribly dangerous with them.
So and now, then, without giving too much away, he even kind of ditches that entire idea for a sexy stewardess, the oldest excuse in the book.
That'll, I was going to say cliche, but I guess it's a cliche.
Yeah, right.
I guess that would be the correct word. I was doubting myself there. I don't have theme music. I don't have the kind of self-esteem you do, Frisbee.
Well, catch up. Just get in people's faces. That's all I can suggest.
Yeah, how do you guys feel about this episode? This was your first one, Rhea, as you did not watch the first two with us. So how do you feel stepping into this weird, wacky world about halfway into it?
It's really weird for me because I actually never watched this show when I was a kid.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
I know. I don't know why I didn't. I guess I just had my TV stuck on Nickelodeon. Just watching that all the time.
That's understandable.
But yeah. I don't know. This episode was weird. It kind of set up this thing where I'll get into it more into it later, but I'm like eternally creeped out by Mr. Belding, just that character.
Like, oh, yeah.
Who thought this was a good idea to have this principal be so close and personal with these kids? It's like the most bizarre relationship in the world.
Yeah, I think it started out with like him sort of just being like an older mentor to these kids. And then by the end of this season, he's like having slumber parties with them, like getting revenge on them, fighting them. Like, it's insane.
Dancing with Kelly, the head cheerleader, slow dancing, no less.
Mm-hmm. I was going to bring that up, too, because, okay, we'll get to that. That creeped me out so bad.
Yeah. Well, in season two, it was Mr. Belding's big idea to have a swimsuit contest between all the students. So he's a creep.
I think you're just supposed to be a foil for Zach, you know, just like, oh, he's the principal and watch Zach get the best of him and maybe learn something from him too, though, in the end. And now he's just like, all right, let's start flesh peddling. Get all the girls out here in their skivvies. Such a weird dude. But in this episode, he comes off as the more, like, the better Belding brother. And I hate alliteration, but I did it anyway. One of my favorite scenes is when they're preparing for the whitewater rafting trip that Rob is still committed to hosting at the time. And they have a raft inside what I'm guessing is a gymnasium. And they're pretending to whitewater raft, like a simulation, without water or anything. So they're just rocking the raft. And even Rob is kind of a creep because then he says that they need to start practicing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And he's getting real close to watch him do it. So he gets, like, Slater and Jesse together, and Zach and Kelly. And he's like, all right, guys, let's see this mouth-to-mouth.
Get closer, guys.
Yeah, Rob's supposed to be hip, but he's kind of a creep as well. It's a Belding trait, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I actually wrote that down. I said, with the bouncing boats and encouraging CPR while he creepily watches them, just, like, making all these notes about how creepy he was.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a weird dude. He's got that long, like, Michael Bolton hair, too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, this is probably not just a Belding trait. As we'll get to later, I think anybody over the age of 18 in this show is just horrible and wants nothing more than to date these children. But another thing I thought was weird about this episode was that Mr. Belding wanted to take these kids on a trip to Yosemite, which is, you know, this big park with mountains and whatever in California. And all the kids are like, oh, that's stupid, and you're so boring, and we don't want to do that, Mr. Belding. And like, what a slap in the face to a beautiful and majestic park, one of our national parks that was created by Teddy Roosevelt. And the show just shits all over it. And I found...
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of, like, adventurous, outdoorsy things you can do at Yosemite. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, you could rock climb. You could probably whitewater raft there. I mean, there's mountains and lakes and streams and rivers and stuff. Like, you know, these kids just shit all over it. And, like, this show kind of takes pride in the fact that it's, like, in California. Like, the kids are always talking about the beach and surfing and everything. And then they just totally shit on Yosemite. I thought it was weird.
Maybe that's what's supposed to really twist the knife in this episode. Like, it puts you in Belding shoes when the kids just shit all over Yosemite. Like, oh, why would you do that? That Rob must be a real charismatic dude.
These asshole kids shitting all over my favorite park.
You'll deal with those nerds later.
Yeah, I guess it could be like a SoCal versus NorCal thing. Like, we don't want to go... Yeah, we don't want to go to Yosemite. They say hella there all the time.
Yeah, they're probably all from the valley.
So, did you guys ever have like a real cool teacher that let you call him by his first name like this fellow did?
No.
No, I don't think I did. I think my favorite teacher was actually like what kids from Bayside would consider the nerdiest. I thought he was awesome. He was a history teacher. And he was bald, and he was like the most stern, but he was really funny too. Like, he had a great wit to him. That was my favorite. What about you? Did you have like a cool teacher who's like, rip up your homework because we don't do grades? Those are an institutional rule.
No, I had a teacher in fifth grade who like let me wear my baseball cap, even though it was against the school rules to do so. So that was pretty cool. But
right.
I think that's probably the only teacher I ever like acknowledged. I think the rest of the teachers, when they tried to talk to me, I was just reading Spawn comic books, stuff like that.
I'd also like to point out that not only is this the last episode where Screech is funny to me, like I love when they're in the raft and he gets really into it, too into it, and he thinks he's drowning. So when Mr. Belding comes in, does his "Hey, hey, hey, what's going on here?" Screech's response is, "I'm drowning and nobody cares." That was very funny. And there's another part where I think this is the last time where Zach gets away with... Well, no, that's not true. It's the last time that Zach kind of tries to be sly. Zach is listening to the Beldings discussion where Rob is trying to ease his way out of the field trip. And Mr. Belding is like talking back to him, like, "You can't do this to these kids," and everything like this. And then as Rob leaves, Zach doesn't run behind the lockers. I mean, the lockers are right next to Belding's door. Instead, he just puts his back on the locker and kind of acts like he was just relaxing in a darkened hallway. It's not exactly like Jason Bourne material. This is like early, early James Bond shit where, you know, he pretends he's making out with himself using his own hands on his back.
Yeah. Well, he's probably got a very high agility rating, so he doesn't have to try hard to hide.
Yeah.
Like in Fallout.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's high intelligence and high agility. Yeah. And I mean, like, early James Bond. Like, you guys were talking... you were talking about James Bond films recently on your show. And he's not so much like Daniel Craig Bond. He's more like Sean Connery Bond in this show, I think. Would you agree?
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Okay.
Always making everything British. This Jason Frisbee.
I tried throwing Jason Bourne in there, but didn't feel like it was flying. Didn't have that same pizzazz as James Bond.
It didn't have that flair that you needed.
Yeah, that bland, favorless, tea-bitter flair.
Moving on to episode 2, we have Breaking Up is Hard to Undo. In this episode, Jesse and Slater, Zach and Kelly, and Mr. and Mrs. Belding break up at the same time. For different reasons, though. There's a weird part in this, in the beginning of this episode, where Slater's talking about why he likes Jesse and stuff, and he mentions her shaking and her earthquaking, which seems like a veiled reference to sex to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what else earthquaking would be. Unless she's a really big fan of that comedian.
They're going to say the wrestler.
Or the wrestler.
Early 90s wrestler Earthquake.
Yeah, either one. She's always trying to show him DVDs of Earthquake versus Mr. Perfect. Yeah, how do you guys feel about this episode? This was one that was wrought with emotion, I feel.
I think digging into that Mr. Belding becoming kind of a creep, really overstepping his bounds as principal and authoritarian figure, and instead hanging out in Zach's bedroom with his friends and getting pizza for all of them and trying to rap with the kids by huddling by Zach's bed.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit weird in this episode.
Belding has that really solemn meeting, like, at the Max, although nobody else is there, so I think it's, like, after hours and, like, they snuck in or something, where he's drinking coffee with Screech and talking about his troubles.
Yeah, it becomes obvious that Belding has no adult friends that he has to talk to, like, 16 and 15-year-olds about his problems.
See,
that's kind of sad.
It's creepy.
It's creepy and sad. I mean, it's sad to think, like, this guy has made no effort to make friends of his own age. That sucks, too.
You are too nice.
Too nice to creepy Belding?
Yes.
Yeah.
More on creepy than sad. I could give a shit about sad. It's too creepy to be sad.
Yeah. In fact, right here, one of my notes is, Belding is a creep. It's right there in black and white.
Well, I can't argue with that. Those note takings, yeah. Hard to fight.
Also in this episode, Kelly starts hanging out with her ex-boyfriend, whose name is Todd Winfield, I believe. And, you know, it bums Zach out. He's pretty jealous about the whole situation. But it's like, when did Kelly have time to date this guy? Because she's been going out with Zach for like 2 years, and they're 15 years old. Like, it's
classic 12-year-old boyfriend material.
Mm-hmm.
You never forget your 12-year-old significant other.
That's something the Belding knows all too well.
Mm-hmm.
Get it? Because he's a creep.
Yeah. He knows way too much about the kids' lives.
Well, the one big note I had about this episode is when Slater and Zach were waiting for the girls to call. Okay, nothing can convince me that they weren't making out before we came onto that scene, because they were sitting so close together. Like, you guys were making out.
Yeah, there's some material later on where Zach and Slater start to be more in cahoots with each other, especially during the climax of this season, which I'm sure we'll get to. Where they have to battle somebody from the other coast. And they actually exchange this air kiss between each other. At that moment, I didn't even think about it at this point, but I know the scene you're talking about. I just remember thinking, there's got to be like a ton of slash fiction about these two guys. And yeah, there's tumblers. So
there's tumblers?
I'm pretty certain there are. I'll see if I can grab them again. I had to check to make sure.
If anything's
going to be... get annoying Facebook photos from me next week.
Well, there's not going to be anything getting me into slash fiction on Tumblr. It's probably going to be this. I would shit these dudes so hard. Episode 3, though, is the Glee Club. A real ahead-of-its-time episode here with the kids in the hopes of winning a contest and a trip to Hawaii, join a glee club. This is notable because we see the return of Violet, Screech's girlfriend, who was there for one episode about a year ago, and now she's back. And you'd think she'd be there if Screech was going to be dating her this whole time, but she hasn't been. So I found that weird. And there's also a scene where a nerd says something, like kind of makes a joke, and then Slater raises his hand to him like he's going to hit him. Which I feel is a very weird thing for one of your heroes of your show to do, is to threaten violence to nerds. But I guess that's how things rolled in the 90s.
Or at least on this show.
Yeah,
Yeah, like, there's always been, like, a back and forth and, like, making fun of the nerds on this show, but, yeah, Slater, like, directly threatens violence to them. And I think that's one of the very, like, one of many things in the season. Like, this is the very darkest season of Saved by the Bell we've talked about. And I think that's one of the first things. And it's just going to get worse and worse from here. Like, it's so violent and mean this season.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very insular with their own group, though, because they've accepted Screech into their ranks. And that's the weirdest part, is that Screech is, you know, he'll get played around with, but never get threatened as hard as nerds outside of the circle. Nerds, geeks, dweebs, spazoids, who are outside of the group. The group of, as ruled by the dual philosophers of Zach and Slater. And what I thought was really interesting to note on that is that when Violet and Screech are hanging out and very much into each other, Slater comments on it by saying, "Look at Screech. I haven't seen him this happy since Mr. Ed was colorized." And with that quote, I noted, "That's very sweet of Slater to remember that moment in Screech's life."
That's true.
So, I mean, yeah, he's looking out for his number one dweeb, but anybody else who, like, tries to, you know, come in, he's like, "No dweebs allowed. We're allowed one." We've met that quota with Screech.
The nerds on this show, I've been watching this show back-to-back with Freaks and Geeks, which is also the first time I've ever seen Freaks and Geeks as well. What an awful comparison between the two shows, first of all. But one of the things I noticed about this show is, like, all of the nerds look like they're from the 1950s.
Yeah, I think they were really banking on the movie Revenge of the Nerds to still be really popular during this show.
Yeah, because they all look like that. And then I was, like, wondering, I'm just, like, the group is obviously, like, really popular. Like, two of them are on the cheerleading team. One of them's a football player. You know, one of them's obviously, you know, the cool one, Zach. And then Jesse is the smart one. And I'm just like, well, how the hell did Screech end up with this group? And then I realized, I'm like, oh, I think they tolerate him because he's supposed to be funny. Like, he's, like, the funny one, which is what validates him, which is just awful, if you think about it.
Yeah, and also, like, it's kind of established earlier on that Screech and Zach have kind of known each other for years and years and years. And so, I think Screech is sort of like that friend that, like, you've just kind of had for years and years and years, so you can't get rid of him. I think we've all probably either had that friend or were that friend, maybe. And I guess he's probably that. Like, I think that, you know, like, if you're, like, if Screech were to be like, "Hey, I'm moving," nobody would really care that much.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that way, too. Plus, his outfits. Oh, my God. I don't get it. Like, it's so early 90s, I can't tell if the costume designer was trying to make him look cool or trying to make him look ridiculous.
There are parts from the earlier season where his wardrobe kind of looks like he's trying to be cool, like, he doesn't wear a Devo shirt or anything like that, but it comes close to that. I mean, it looks like some, you know, trendy sort of geek-oriented band or something that he's wearing a shirt of. And now, I mean, as we get through the season, they all look like they're about to turn 19 or 20, and he's still wearing that shit. You're just like, come on. I mean, it's that sort of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo syndrome. It's like, you've seen billions of ghosts that just turn out to be regular people. How can you still be scared and still be wearing a green shirt and brown khakis?
Come on, ghosts are very scary. No matter how many fake ghosts you've seen, it's still scary to maybe encounter a real ghost. Everybody knows that.
It can't be. He must be incredibly high to think otherwise.
Well, that's it. Yeah, they're very paranoid people, these guys. These Shaggies and Scoobies.
He's talking to a dog, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That dog's talking back, though. Speaking of Screech, though, again, when Zach is encouraging Violet and Screech to come bowling with, you know, the group, so this might be some serious headway, like introducing another geek into the group. Violet says she has glee club practice, to which Violet encourages the gang to join, and this is the weird part, Zach replies with that he says he's got detention for having a pizza delivered to Geometry, so he can't come to Glee Club practice, even though he just invited her to go to bowling, which conflicts with her Glee Club practice. No one catches him on this. No one says, hey, wait a minute, what about the... We're going to go bowling still, right? Now you're saying you have detention?
Well, he's probably just lying right to her face.
He's yeah, he is. He's lying to everyone's face in that instance.
Yeah, he's a total
sociopath. Even the viewers.
Especially the viewers.
Yeah, tell me about it.
All right, you future mechanics.
Episode 4 is The Last Dance. Kelly and Zach break up when Kelly falls for the college-age manager of the Max. Speaking of shipping Zach and Slater, there's another scene, and we talked about this in earlier seasons too, the sort of sexual tension between Zach and Slater. In this episode, Slater talks about how much he wants to see Zach wearing tights, and Zach tells Slater that he needs to shave his legs to make them look better. So,
see, they were making out on that bed!
They probably were.
Dude, more than making out, there was some obvious groping going on.
It was the
you need to shave your legs, dude.
It was the early 90s. There was a lot of experimenting going on with these kids. It was a time of experimentation. MTV was showing guys
RuPaul.
Kissing. Yeah, RuPaul and dudes kissing.
Yep.
There's a part where Kelly is trying to get a job at the Max, which was apparently recently owned by a guy named Max, who was a magician, rather. And then when she's, like, at this job interview, she's like, oh, you know, I don't really have an experience as a waitress. And the guy's like, well, you know, the boss really wants an experienced waitress. But is he talking about Max? Where's Max at? And if it is Max who still owns the place, I'm sure he would hire Kelly because he likes her, because they've been friends for all this long time. But apparently Max is just gone, or not, and it seems like a glaring hole. And the entire show, as the publicity photos and everything for the show, have always had Max in them up until this season, and then he's just gone without any notice. I found it to be very sad for him.
Yeah, there's some vague dialogue where they say, like, oh, yeah, the Max has new owners, and that's about as much as they say about it.
Yeah, maybe there was a terrible falling out with Ed Alonso, the actor who played Max.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, he's performing at King's Island now. Mm-hmm. Can't say it was a step up.
I think he's on some show, too, where, like, he teaches people magic. But I mean, maybe I'm thinking about The Amazing Jonathan or somebody. Oh, well.
Maybe they just exist in their own little weird reality outside of normal space and time, which is why characters like that just disappear.
That's a very astute observation about, like, the continuity of this show, because none of it really connects. I mean, we're going to be introduced to a lot more characters as this show progresses. And, well, even in this instance, we get Kelly's new beau, and we're going to learn that's not a... He's going to be around for maybe a couple episodes, and that's about it.
Well,
that's a very common thing here.
That's for the best. I think they realized with that boyfriend, Kelly gets this new boyfriend who says that he's a junior in college, which makes him, you know, 21 years old or so, maybe 22. Yeah. Kelly is 15 or 16, so I think after they wrote and filmed this episode, they realized that, and they had to get rid of that boyfriend as fast as possible. Because
I totally believe that. I mean, with some of the slapdash writing that goes on, I would totally believe that they did not crunch age numbers on this one. Like, ooh, this is weird, but let's continue to have the principal hang out at the students' bedrooms. That's fine.
I'm torn about this episode because a part of me is just like, okay, she's not having any, from what I could tell, she wasn't having any problems with Zach. So she just dumps him because she feels what this like animal connection to this older guy. And then, but then at the same time, so it's just like, to me, that's just like shitty writing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, that's really believably teenager of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a part of me that really wants Kelly to be more articulate about what's going on. And it's not even the fact that she's a cheerleader in the show. It's just the fact that it's like, when you're a teenager, your hormones are pretty much all over the place. So you know, it's okay to sort of date around and see, you know, who you're attracted to. And I got the same thing. Like, I was simultaneously frustrated and like, okay, that's all right.
I didn't think it was all right at all. This is a grown man dating a child. This is terrible.
Yeah, that part's terrible. I'm saying from Kelly's perspective, like, she can't talk about why she's attracted to somebody else besides Zach. Could have been any age. Could have been like a high school student. Preferably, that would have made a lot more sense. I agree.
Yeah. And I mean, as we sort of mentioned, this show is full of like 50s mentality, as I think, you know, most of the 80s were. I think people were obsessed with the 50s and the 80s for some reason. But, you know, so I think that they were like, well, this guy is older than Zach, which makes him more attractive than Zach. Like, that's just the simple math from your 50s mentality.
If it is 1850s mentality, it would have been totally fine for a 21-year-old to date a 15-year-old.
That's true. They would have been married instantly.
Yeah, just wed on the spot. You're in college. Oh, dear. Let's make this wedding happen.
Without taking the episode following this one into account yet, but just this one standalone, I also think that if this really happened, like if they were all friends and then Kelly left Zach to be with an older guy and just with a vague reason, I just feel a connection. If that was my friends and a girl did that, none of us would ever be friends with her anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big thing in real life that doesn't happen in this show. Like, there are so many points in this show where these people would just stop being friends in real life and hate each other forever.
Yeah!
They actually pull through and address those in the show, and that's what surprised me, because high school doesn't really have that. High school was way more passive and passive-aggressive in my experience, and it sounds like it was the same with yours as well. Or if somebody did something you didn't like, or if you did something that people didn't like, there would hardly be an exchange about it and just more alienation, ostracization. And I think that's where like Freaks and Geeks comes in, because, you know, there's the separation of social cliques within the school because of, you know, people who find you offensive at face value. You just don't want to associate with you.
Yep.
That's true. I think that our producer, Mohammed, he had a good friend in high school that he got into like kind of a silly little fight with, and now he doesn't talk to him anymore. How does that make you feel, Mohammed? Do you have regrets?
Look, man, I made a mistake.
Yeah, that's so. I thought this was weighing heavily on your mind.
happy he's here.
He's been here this whole time. We always forget to introduce him.
Oh, good, because I really wanted to be on an episode with him on it.
How you doing, my friend?
He wants to know how you're doing.
How the hell are you?
Obviously doing pretty good. I just giggling with happiness over here.
Okay.
Now we have episode 5. This is called The Aftermath. This is an episode about that Dr. Dre album. Zach's friends set him up on numerous dates, and he tries to make Kelly jealous. Lisa has her sweet 16 birthday party. This episode made me happy, because there's a scene, you know, Zach is obviously still trying to get over Kelly, which is a rare point of continuity in the show. And he goes to a movie with Screech and Slater, and they're all kind of like reminiscing and talking about this time that Zach pulled some crazy prank, and Slater wasn't there for it because, you know, he's still somewhat new to this school, I guess. And, you know, it's like a rare sense of how these people behave when there's not a scheme afoot, and the way that they sort of have an actual friendship when they're not all screwing each other over. And I thought that's probably the only time we've seen that in this show, and I thought it was really cute.
Did it break your heart that the only way they got along when they're not scheming is by talking about schemes they did in the past?
A little bit, yes.
I did not like one specific part of this episode, and that's the return of the very deaf Miss Simpson. I just...
Yeah.
That character is the nails on the chalkboard for this show, for me.
Yeah. Well, one thing I didn't like about this episode is that Jeff is still there Jeff, who is 21 and who agrees to go to a sweet 16 birthday party. And Lisa's parents don't go, "What the fuck are you doing here?" So that bummed me out about that scene.
I felt like this episode had the only realistic portrayal of a principal, Mr. Belding, where Zach was kicking around some lockers and he was like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Whatever." And he's like, "My office now." And I'm like, "Thank you." The only realistic portrayal of this principal in this whole season.
Yeah, that's true. Usually in this show, if Zach was kicking around lockers, Mr. Belding would go, "Hey, how about you date my daughter for a little while for some reason?"
I'm blackmailing my students.
This episode, despite, you know, being a continuation of the first one, it took this really weird shift where I felt like I still wanted the problem to be about Kelly dating this creepy older guy and how she dumped Zach. And then it turned into Zach being an asshole and everybody hating him because he wasn't handling the breakup well. And I'm like, well, no fucking shit. She didn't really give him a reason. What the fuck is happening? Are we in a parallel universe?
Yeah.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. Like, give him time to figure it out because he's got no inclination. He's like, "Well, I'm not 21, a college student. I can't drink. I don't have a car. What is it? Which one of these? Or is it all of them?"
And she's dating the guy who is the manager at the only place where Zach hangs out.
And that was a weird part during, like, his "I'm going to be a dick in front of my ex-girlfriend" thing. Because he goes to the Max with a girl he's on a date with. I think it's Screech's cousin, if I'm not mistaken, who is obviously adopted in, as we find out. That's why she's so attractive and doesn't look like Screech.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they go to the Max. And, you know, Kelly's there as hostess. And Zach says, "Can you get us a table? Something really romantic." Now, if you've never seen the show and you don't know what the Max looks like, it's like a family restaurant, like a Johnny Rockets or something. Have you ever seen a romantic table at a Johnny Rockets? Ever? Or like a Steak and Shake? Have you ever gone to Steak and Shake and been like, "Hey, can you get me and my girlfriend the most romantic table at this fucking Steak and Shake?"
Yeah, it's pretty absurd. I had that note too. And then in a later episode, people are slow dancing at the Max on a date.
Yeah. I'm like, who does that? That restaurant looks like a Barbie playset I had. It really does. It looks like this rock and roll restaurant Barbie playset I had. I'm like, this isn't a place for, you know, intimate dancing. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. As a rule of thumb, you should not try to be romantic at a place where there used to be magic. It's not going to work.
That's a pretty safe bet. And also, if they have arcade games like Mr. No, because you should probably just be playing his arcade games instead.
That's true. Also in that scene where they're on the romantic date and Zach is trying to make Kelly jealous and everything like this, that whole scene was ripped off for the movie Spider-Man 3. Because it happened.
Yeah, Spider-Man 3 ripped it off of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only Spider-Man 3 change, though, is that Kelly wasn't about to sing a song.
Yeah. Other than that, it's pretty much
maybe
shot for shot.
This show pulls a lot of weird punches, so maybe that was what was coming next.
She is a singer in a band.
Yeah. Oh,
that's right. Yeah.
What do you guys think of the band from the last episode, Zack Attack?
Oh my god. Well, first of all, someone was playing the tambourine, which whenever I see that, I get really irritated. And yes, it also reminded me of Josie and the Pussycats, if we're going to continue with this weird old-timey vibe this show has. I'm like, who plays the tambourine in the 80s?
Yeah, I thought it was weird that that happened. I didn't remember them actually having a band called Zack Attack, as there's an episode later where, spoiler alert, it's all a dream, but Zack Attack becomes like the biggest band on Earth, and I thought that was just a one-shot episode. And like everything else in the show, had no bearing on any other episodes. So I was shocked to see that there was an actual Zack Attack.
Speaking of which, did you notice that Lisa's house is exactly the same layout and design as Screech's house last season?
Mm-hmm. They can't afford that many sets.
Yeah, that's the idea.
But I always on the odd days, and she stays there on the even days.
Yeah, yeah. Or Lisa's family just became so rich and powerful that they bought Screech's house to hold a Sweet 16 party.
That's possible.
It's getting demolished next week.
At that Sweet 16 party, there's a part where Jeff is talking to Slater, and like Slater's giving him the cold shoulder at first, and then Jeff's like, oh, you know, I used to wrestle. And Slater's like, oh, we should talk. And it's like, you're talking right now, dude. Like, just keep talking. Like, that's how a conversation works. You don't stop a conversation in the middle and go, oh, we should talk.
Slater likes to announce things as they're happening. Instead of referring to himself in third person, he likes to refer to situations as if they're as if he needs to describe them in narration.
Yeah.
We should be talking right now.
We should also go
so
to a party.
So we continue talking.
Let's go to a birthday party at some point, Jeff.
Now let's boogie on down!
Episode 6 is called Operation Zack. Zack is scared about having surgery on his knee, and Lisa's mother performs the operation. I have the note, the basketball coach is played by Thorin Oakenshield, but I don't remember why I wrote that, so I guess...
Does he fail to defeat the white orc?
Yeah, that's what happens at the end of this episode. He just gets beat unmercifully by a white orc. And you see that Bilbo was the most heroic one of all, because he's in a gang with a bunch of loser-ass dwarves. You can't even beat up a white orc.
I will forgive Thorin because he's very good-looking, but yeah, that was kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah, totally. Jeez. Like, they build Thorin to be like this, like, you know, total badass, like the guy who's going to reclaim his throne, and he just gets beat up horribly. That was just awful.
This is all Hobbit talk. I don't know nothing about Hobbit talk.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I mean, it's a book that's been around since before I was born. Like, I'm not trying to be snide. I'm just saying, like, oh, I haven't seen the movie yet, nor have I read the book that's been out for decades.
Well, we just ruined it for you.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, Thorin Oakenshield is a dork. And he gets
trust me. You're not spoiling anything for this guy.
I actually just like the fact that we finally got a Lisa-centric episode. I feel like I watched a little bit of season 2, I think, or the wrong season by accident. So I got to see like maybe like 3 or 4 episodes where all she does is show up in a really, you know, Cher Horowitz type outfit and say sassy things to Screech. So it was actually kind of nice to see that, you know, she's an actual character with a personality. And she has, like, a history with Zack. They have this, like, you know, long friendship. And I thought that was cute.
Yeah, I've been a long-standing advocate for the past couple times we've done this Saved by the Bell recap stuff. I'm an advocate for Lisa Turtle because she's far and away provides the most sound advice to all of her friends. Like, she's mature beyond her years, despite having, like, you know, incredibly focused attention spans towards fashion and wealth, which, you know, is to its own thing. I mean, she may become like a fashion designer or something when she graduates high school, but she's always providing the best advice. And if they follow it, then everything works out. So it's no surprise that, like, she's the volunteering as a candy striper in this one, and her mom's a surgeon, and so is her dad. Like, that was... You can see this coming, basically.
Yeah, this is kind of her only episode where she's a reasonable person. And like you said, in the past couple of seasons, there have been a lot of episodes where, like, she's kind of the voice of reason and stuff. And she's pretty ruthless later on in this, where really all she cares about is gossiping and making people's lives miserable.
True, yeah.
So it's nice to see.
She also seems to be everywhere. Like, I noticed that in later seasons whenever something gossipy or juicy would happen, she just happened to be there.
Oh, wait. I mean, at least these make sense. You missed out on the first couple seasons where Slater is, like, sitting on a stall, like, with his feet on the toilet so you don't know he's there. Just hanging out in the bathroom, waiting for people to drop some juicy tidbits.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
And then that was my favorite line from last season. He eases up and he pokes over the stall and it zooms in on him. He goes, you can hear some interesting things if you hang out in the bathroom stall. That's not even a joke. That was like the tragic undertone to commercial.
Oh my God, does he have some weird scat fetish?
I'm almost certain. I'm pretty sure when he was saying, like, you hear some interesting stuff in the toilet, he wasn't talking about the gossip he heard.
Yeah, well, we do learn that he's from Germany.
That is the smartest joke of all jokes.
AC scatological.
Another thing about this episode is that Mr. Belding takes all of Zach's tests for him, which seems something
overkill.
Like, yeah, it seems like something you could probably get fired for.
Yeah, that was weird too, because I thought there was going to be some, like, you know, lesson in that, the fact that he was manipulating the principal. But yeah, that whole thing was played just for, you know, comic relief. Like, oh, school is hard. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there's no comeuppance with that one. And I thought that the, like you mentioned earlier, when Lisa has a heart-to-heart with Zach, they talk about, like, when they were younger, I thought it was going to, like, breach into, you know, maybe they had dated when they were just young, young kids. Like, when you think you're dating, like, oh, will you be my girlfriend or will you be my boyfriend sort of thing. I thought it was going to get into that territory, but it's like, no, they just went ice skating with Screech. That was it. But they played it, like, so much more. So I'm thinking that there's probably a Tumblr for them as well.
I actually had to watch one of these episodes on YouTube. Too long of a story as to why. But I noticed that the first comment, the episode was not even, Lisa had a very small role. And the top rated comment was, did you see the way she reacted when this guy said something about Zach True Love? And I'm just like, you know, there's a Tumblr for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert, there is an episode later on where Zach and Lisa maybe fall in love. Only one episode, of course, as with all things on this show, but.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. It was like, I'm interested to see these two people playing it. I mean, at least, like, you know, the actor is actually selling this moment. And then I quickly realized, like, you know, once this episode is over, it's like amnesia. Like, they're never going to remember this.
Yeah. Well, I think
they have a mind wipe at the end of every episode.
That's probably true. But yeah. I think that one reason this scene is so, like, touching and, like, you know, good, is because these two guys were dating at the time in real life. IRL, as the kids say.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Well, I did not know that.
See, that's more integral, I think. That explains a lot more than just trying to, like, build something into the on-screen characters. Like, wow, those two actors are really selling the scene.
Yeah.
And that makes more sense. Where'd you find that?
I think it was in Screech's book.
Oh, okay.
I believe the parts that I got to. Also in episode 8, entitled Fake IDs, Zach touches Lisa's boob for a brief second.
I did not see that.
It's when they're at the club. There's a YouTube for it. They got it in slow motion on YouTube.
I am going to go look for this after this.
So episode 7, Check Your Mate. Screech wins a spot in the chess tournament finals against a Russian player. This episode was pretty dumb. I didn't care for this one.
I thought you would have loved this one because it's all about, like, communist Russia.
Yeah.
As if that's still a... Was that still a thing? What year is this supposed to be? 91 or 92?
91.
Okay. That's cutting it. Nah, that's weird.
Well, he didn't do anything very Russian. You know,
except, like, everything. I mean, this was obviously, like, a playoff of Rocky IV.
Well,
there's the entire I will crush you sort of motif.
If he was a real communist Russian, he would have killed 1/10 of these children at this school just to teach them a lesson.
Yeah, there's no awesome. Well, there's kind of a training scene, sort of.
Yeah, there's a scene. Violet's in this episode again, Screech's girlfriend. And there's a reporter from, like, Chess Magazine or whatever who's hitting on Screech, and Kelly gets really mad about it. And I was like, what right do you have to get mad about this? You dumped your boyfriend of like 2 years for your boss, who is an adult, as I've said before. So I was really mad at Kelly for being very righteous and being a hypocrite.
Well, yeah, it's also being a teenager and just like not having these sort of twists in opinion, no matter what. We all did this.
We all did. I guess maybe I was being too righteous just now, and maybe somebody could be mad at me for being a hypocrite.
I'm sure we have some teenage listener who is, so don't worry about it.
Life lessons on Pool Party Radio.
Allison Fox was awesome. The character, I thought she was great.
The reporter girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was outstanding.
I really liked Tori Spelling as Violet. I would watch a whole show about that character.
Yeah, Violet's great, and it's people always like would make fun of Tori Spelling because she was terrible on 90210, but she's amazing on this show. So it's great to see, I guess relativity.
Yeah.
You can be the worst person on a good show or the best person on a bad show.
Biggest fish in a small pond.
Yeah. There's also a part on this where Zach and Slater are taking the Russian fellow. And, they're like, hey, we've got to hurry. That's why we're rushing you. And that's hilarious.
Of course it is.
That's like the best joke of this entire show.
Yeah, I actually have that noted, and I say that Parker would probably love this.
I do love that.
Meanwhile, I was more charmed by the exchange between Zach and Slater, where Zach asks, "You like making some money, Slater?" And Slater's response is, "Indubitably." That fucking rules. I wish they had more like cheesy exchanges like that.
Everybody likes making money.
Oh, and what about Mr. Belding? This is one of the first episodes where he's dancing through the halls. What do you guys think of that? He's doing a Scatman Crothers impersonation, and he's, like, dancing.
If he was our principal, we'd all think he was creepy, especially if it did that.
I would think it's hilarious. I think this is really telling about my personality, where you guys find the most creepy character is the one that I find to be, like, the most hilarious and endearing. It's a real good thing I didn't get into any Vans when I was a kid. I would have probably been messed up.
That's true.
I like that scene where he's just, like, he's just scatting down the hall to his office, like, pa-da, pa-da, pa-da. And he spins around, and Screech is trying to figure out what he's going to wear. And Belding stops, points to him. He says, "I go with the blue ones, because they match your eyes." And he spins around and continues scatting and dancing.
Even that's creepy, talking about
it's pretty funny.
Little kids noticing the eye colors of little children.
His students,
he's got to know, I mean, he has to know their names and everything. What's wrong with that?
Terrible. Episode 8 is entitled Fake IDs. Zach, Screech, and Slater make fake IDs to get into a club where they discover Kelly's boyfriend with another girl. This is the episode where I noticed that we are finally starting to get some continuity, as I kind of assumed we would never see Jeff again. And so I was very excited. I was also excited that they actually made a set for the club. Because that very rarely happens. I expected them to just like be hanging out at the Max and talking about what happened at the club. Since they're so cheap on this show. But other than that, I didn't really care about this episode. It seemed like I should care about it because so much happened. But I don't know. It seemed kind of silly to me, I guess. How do you guys feel about it?
I feel like the weird lesson of this show was, you can get away with getting into a club with a fake ID as long as you're a girl. And if you're not a girl, someone's mom will show up and drag you out. Did you guys notice that at the end?
Yeah.
Like, the girls just walked away to go cry in the bathroom, and then Zach's mom showed up and was like, "All right, boys, time to go home." And none of them seemed to mention that there was a bunch of girls, also underage, that were still in the club.
Well, they didn't want to narc on those guys. They had a strict code of no narking.
Yeah, that was the ultimate title for this. No narcs. No narking.
Yeah.
I like how devoted Slater is to Jesse. He tries to hit on college girls, but he can't stop talking about his own girlfriend. He even carries a scrapbook with him. That's pretty cute.
That was very touching. I like that you know, like Slater and Jesse like hate each other like a lot of the time, but whenever they're apart, like they really make it. You know, like there's a lot of stuff where Slater, you can tell that he really likes her, and I find that cute. I find it weird, like Zach's mom catches the kids because she's like dropping off a shirt in his room, and his phone rings, and she answers it, and you know the person's like, "Oh, tell Zach we're gonna be at the club." Blah. And I was like very curious as to why Zach didn't just give the girl his cell phone number, because he's got that goddamn cell phone with him every minute of every day. It seems like a fatal flaw, but I guess the minutes were probably pretty expensive back in 1991.
Yeah, that's probably true. And that phone was probably very cumbersome. It's not like now where you can just like throw it into a coat pocket or something. You'd have to hold it in your hand the entire time.
Yeah, or have a backpack.
Yeah, you like look like Vietnam. Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
The show was really weird about what they decided to call out Zach on. Because there's an episode later where, you know, Zach's cutting class, and since him cutting class doesn't end up being, like, the moral of the story, they don't really address him getting reprimanded for it. And yet, I was surprised that his mom caught him, because, you know, the point of this episode was for them to get rid of creepy 22-year-old Jeff. And then I'm surprised that they felt the need to add that in where at the end, where it's like, oh, and by the way, don't make fake IDs, you know?
Yeah, I think that since they were, like, finally getting a foothold into continuity, they just needed a reason for them to not ever go back to this club.
Oh, okay.
Hi, guys!
Hi.
Screech!
Episode 9, though, is entitled Pipe Dreams. This is one of the ones that stick out most in my memory of the show as a kid. Oil is found under Bayside, because Southern California is so rich with oil. The community votes not to pump it, so the natural balance of the land won't be destroyed. Thanks, Netflix, for ruining the whole fucking episode. This episode has one of my favorite lines in any show ever, and it's this.
Sorry I'm late, but I think this duck is hurt.
I love that. I think that's a great excuse for pretty much anything.
You're going to start carrying a duck with you over you go?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm late for this jury interview, but this duck is hurt.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you do take a duck with you, don't even actually say that. Just have a little recorder that, you know, is from the actual show of him saying that.
Yeah, I think that's what I'll do. I think it was Jeremy Morrison who called me and you, Frisbee, out for being late to meet him on Skype a couple of weeks ago. If only we would have had this, it would have all been smoothed over.
Sorry I'm late, but I think this duck is hurt.
You can really feel the concern.
Yeah.
Really, it's amazing.
Yeah. That guy was just calling it in at this point.
This episode is absurd because, you know, there's this whole thing about how they find oil under the school, which would not happen in Southern California. It would probably be tar or something. And then, you know, the idea is that now the school is rich because they found this oil. So now everybody at the school is going to become rich, which is not how things work by any means. And they're talking about, you know, at the climax of it, you know, they're showing like what the new school, the new rich school will look like, which is on the same land. But if they were going to be drilling for oil there, they would probably just build a new school somewhere else.
I like the assumption when they bring this up at the community meeting with the oil developers, and the oil developers are showing like what the rebuilt school is going to look like. He doesn't fight at all when Zach points out like here's these oil wells that'll be all over the school, and he proceeds to like disrupt the model by putting oil wells all over it. The representative is pretty much yeah that's how it's going to look. You're going to have oil wells everywhere. Hope you like oil.
I like how the oil guy was, like, wearing a bolo tie and had a southern accent, too.
Because they're all from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen Dallas, obviously.
Way to stereotype, Saved by the Bell.
Now, speaking of stereotype, their version of being rich at Bayside is exactly like Downton Abbey.
What?
When they envision what they'll be like when they're rich.
Oh, that's right!
They all look like they're on the show Downton Abbey. They're like in this mahogany wood panel sort of study, just reading stock tickers and all this, speaking with British accents or hoity-toity accents.
Yeah, what I love about this daydream about them being so rich is that, you know, like, they're all, like, just famously rich here. And Kelly, her idea of being rich is that she gets to wear a gold suit and still be a waitress.
Yeah.
It was like a gold-trimmed French maid outfit.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
But what about Screech's horribly racially insensitive South Asian stereotype costume?
Oh, my God!
Did he just come off the set of, like, Big Trouble in Little China? Or what was that all about?
Yeah, well, with the Chief Henry episode last season, Screech, he's wont to do those sort of shenanigans.
He just loves to make racial epithets.
That's Screech. He's a bigot. there's a scene in this where, I know in the past, me and you, Frisbee, have sort of pointed out in this show that you know, Jesse seems a little hypocritical at times with the things she talks about. And in this, Slater just strictly calls her out. She's talking about how oil is bad and all this, and then Slater calls her out for her plastic earrings. And I thought that was weird. They were, like, they've now made the jump from, you know, from Jesse, you know, being all for people being, you know, very intellectual and not judging people, like, not judging books by their cover, and yet she wouldn't date that short guy. She found it disgusting that she would have to wear glasses and things like this. And now in this one, the other characters are just calling her out. I found that to be weird that they were going so far with it. How did you feel, Mr. Frisbee?
I thought that it was pretty astute to resolve it that quickly. I mean, it used to be that there would be an entire story arc where it's like, Jesse says she's open and open-minded, but she still has this hang up about her height, or she's not really practicing what she's preaching. And they tried that a couple times, like you mentioned with that, you know, dating the shorter guy episode. It, you know, it plays out pretty quickly. So I thought that was pretty good when it was just more like a discussion that'd be handled, you know, in her most significant relationship at the high school with her boyfriend.
Yeah, Slater just pushed this, he just squashes it instantly, rather than taking a whole episode to deal with it.
Yeah, can you imagine how boring that would have been? Like, if that was the entire episode? It's like, hey, wait a minute, you have plastic everything at home.
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't about her, this was about Zach's duck.
That's Becky. True.
That duck had a name, and that name is Becky. And she's where the oil can't hurt her now.
Yeah.
True words were never spoken.
Oh my God.
They care so much about this duck, it's absurd. Zach cares so much more about the death of this duck than his best friend Chief Henry last season.
No doubt, yeah.
And I don't know, have they not seen a duck? Ducks are mean.
It's true.
Like, I don't know what the fuck they're so being like, oh, this duck. I'm like, ducks are mean, man.
Maybe that's why they like it so much, because they can relate to it. Like, I really understand this duck's incredible anger towards anything. He's so violent.
This whole duck thing is, like, very absurd because, like, Zach keeps talking about how he's, like, gonna go to the pond to visit her and stuff like this. Like, I don't know, it's like they were, like, trying to sell us so hard on the idea that Zach cared about something. But you know what I say. Now that Becky's dead.
Bird season's over, Budhorn.
This is where we start to see more of Zach's pushes towards, I guess, objectifying women in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really, really ambitious. Like, about every episode, he mentions how much he likes to see a girl in bikinis, which I think is just overcompensating for his secret affair with Slater, just saying. But in this episode, they're asking for a bigger gym, and Zach adds in a cheerleader in every locker, which is really creepy. We already know he's a fetish for, like, putting people into lockers and walking in there, especially people that are interested in him, like Kelly's little sister.
That's true.
So he wants more lockers to put cheerleaders in, like some sort of freaking serial killer.
Like
he wants to wear their skin afterwards or something.
Yeah, and then he got together with Screech and Slater and compared business cards. Like Patrick Bateman.
Everywhere he looked, it said no exit. Oh, that's a Glamorama reference. Damn it. Forget it.
You blew it.
I blew it. Capiche? Yeah.
Also in this episode, everybody has like a pet. You know, Zach obviously has Becky, and Lisa has a turtle because her last name is Turtle, and everybody has like a weird pet from the pond. And Kelly has a crawfish, which is like a tiny little bug type of thing, like a couple of inches long. And after like there's this big oil spill that kills everything at the pond, they all come into Mr. Belding's office with bags full of dead animals, and they go, all of our animals are dead. And it's staggering to me that Kelly could have found her tiny little crawfish in all that oil spill. So I thought that was dumb. I care. I was upset watching that part.
What I thought was dumb was the very end of this episode, and not to say that we're going to spoil it, because it's already spoiled in the Netflix Q description. It says that community votes to votes against the oil development. That's not how it actually plays out. After Zach interferes with the, interrupts the presentation going on, and explains that the actual thing that's going to happen is that oil wells will be built on the school property because there's no objection to this after he brings it up. And Belding steps down and speaks for the entire community by saying, I think we know how we should vote. We all wanted a better Bayside, but we didn't realize we had it till now. So Belding votes for everyone like a tyrant.
He's a dictator.
Yeah.
See, maybe he's living in his own weird Brazil fantasy.
I like where that's going. I like that a lot. See, Parker, Brazil is a film by Terry Gilliam. He was from Monty Python, so I'm not sure if you would know who this guy is.
I've heard of him. I know enough to avoid him. Episode 10 of Saved by the Bell. This is an episode called The Wicked Stepbrother, Part 1. Jesse's mother marries a man with a tough New York son. He blackmails Zach, who cuts school to go to a Dodgers game. Eric is how I imagine all New Yorkers. Like, whenever I talk to Mark Fredo, I just imagine that he's, like, this tough. And, like, always, like, trying to find a way to blackmail me and stuff. Wearing a leather jacket and ripped jeans and stuff.
And also, he has the best posters of any character. Did you notice that?
Yeah, he likes the Misfits.
Yeah, Misfits, Motorhead. Pretty rad kid. I think he might be the coolest character on the show.
Yeah, I think that goes without saying.
Okay, well, edit that last part out then.
Well, weird side note that I forgot to mention. Speaking of, like, you know, tough characters on this show, in the first episode where they introduced Jeff, he kicked out some punks in his restaurant that were bothering Kelly.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, they were more interesting than you!
They went to go star in Return of the Living Dead, I think.
Yeah. There's a part in this episode where Eric's whole big thing once he gets here is, he's a butthole, as you might imagine. And his whole master plan is to take Jesse's room for some reason. And I'm convinced that that was part of the plot, just so that they wouldn't have to build a new set for his room.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, like, well, we can't show him in his room, so let's just have him take it over.
Yeah. Or if they would have built, or if they would have had him in his own room, it just would have been Screech's house.
Yeah. I'll just take the entire living room. How's that?
This
was another one of those weird episodes where there was a weird tone shift from part one to part two. Mm-hmm. Like, with the breakup of Kelly and Zach, where they set up this whole thing in part one and then just do a complete about-face in part two, and it's about something completely different. And I'm like, okay, I can't follow you. I'm getting whiplash.
That's true, yeah. This whole first part is about how Zach tells his teacher he's Jewish so he can cut class and go to a Dodgers game, and so Eric's going to blackmail him. He's blackmailing him to get his locker, a foul ball, which is basically worthless, and $20 worth of lunch. So not very good at blackmailing. But, so yeah, he blackmails him. And then, the next episode is about how he takes apart Mr. Belding's car, and the kids have to put it back together before Belding finds out. So yeah, two totally different plots going on.
Yeah. Oh, and you mentioned earlier about, like, the earthquake thing and sex. Mm-hmm. I feel like this one also made an implication about that when he recorded Jesse and Slater, and he started playing that tape, and then she reached for it, and he's like, you know what happens next? And first of all, A, creepy, and B, yeah, that was a pretty heavy implication that, you know, they were fucking.
That's true, yeah. They definitely had sex in this episode. It's also weird, because he goes in and plays the tape, and he's like, you know what happens next? But it's like, he hasn't heard the tape at the time, so how does he know what's on it? So that was weird.
He had a glass to the freaking door and down his pants.
Or maybe he's just being as literal as possible. Like, he says it with heavy implication, but he just stops and goes, well, you know what happened next. I don't. I haven't listened to the tape, but you do because you were there and you're on the tape.
Stop finding the silver lining, Jason.
I think Joshua Hoffman is the best actor on this show. How's that for a silver lining? Eric Tramer, not only the best character actor. And this was like only a handful of things that he did in the early 90s. I mistook this actor for somebody else entirely. I think he's great. I like everything you guys don't like on this show.
I found him to be a very complex character because he goes on and on about how he loves classic movies like Casablanca, but then he also gets very excited to go to the MC Hammer concert.
Yeah. MC Hammer gets name dropped a ton in these. I think it's like once per episode in these first 10.
Money into the show?
I guess, yeah.
He was one of the producers.
Yeah, after all that Taco Bell cash.
We'll pause it here, as this is a two-part episode. They cut, they cut away from this episode after Eric smashes up Mr. Belding's car while he's driving it with Lisa in it. It's a big whole complex sort of a game of cat and mouse as to why he's driving that car with Lisa in it. But suffice it to say, they wreck the car that was entrusted by Mr. Belding to Slater and Zach, and it's a cliffhanger. And so as such, we will be back next week to talk about what happens in part two of this episode, as we're cutting this into two episodes this season because there are so many episodes in it. And otherwise, this will be like a 5-hour episode. So, so that's the end of this show. And how you guys feeling so far about this season? You guys feeling good? Optimistic for how things are going to play out?
Nah, it's pretty bleak on my end, son.
It's true. It gets so much worse.
What about you, Rhea?
Well, yeah, just careens downhill after this. That last episode. I don't even know. We'll get there, I guess.
Yeah. That's teasing for the next episode.
Like pulling teeth.
So, I've heard things about how iTunes is not going to be updating things for the week of Christmas. So if that's true, I guess you'll get the next episode late, everybody. But if that's the case, and you don't find it on iTunes on Friday, it will be at poolpartyradio.com and on Stitcher. Two very reliable places.
Yeah, screw you, iTunes!
Yeah, I couldn't find any concrete answers as to what's happening. I guess it's like iTunes is shutting down, but it might only be for the apps and not the podcasts, but it might be podcasts too, and podcasts might go up like later than normal. I don't know what's going on, so... If you don't see the episode on Friday, it will be up on Stitcher and poolpartyradio.com.
Also, check out badlandgirls.com and Badland Girls on iTunes.
Well, apparently you can't.
Well, not this week, but, when it's updating.
We're on Stitcher now, too. Ho-ho!
Hey, nice. Stitcher's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, get that new Badland Girls on Stitcher, since it doesn't take a week off for crummy holidays.
And we're on Twitter at Badland Girls and Facebook, facebook.com/Badland Girls.
Excellent. We are also on Facebook, facebook.com/Pool Party Radio. I was on the Rotten Ranting show this week to talk about horror comedies. So you can find that at rottenrantings.com or on iTunes, which it's already on iTunes. It got in before the lockout. So good on that. And you can find Mr. Frisbee on one of the latest episodes of Junk Food Dinner. He joined us.
Mm-hmm. Talking about end of the world movies.
That's true. I think that was two episodes ago now, by the time you hear this. Also, yep. Mr. Frisbee was on the new Illogical Contraption radio.
Yeah. Where I talked about that episode of Junk Food Dinner.
Nice.
And also recounted some other stuff, like the axe in my foot and other such, and other tales.
The greatest hits. All the classics.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so...
check that out, Elcon. LogicalContraption.com.
Yeah. Go listen to that. To hear Mr. Frisbee talk about the junk food dinner he was on, it'll be very meta.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I listen to both of them at the same time?
You can listen to it now. While we're recording me talking about listening to it.
I'm going to listen to both of them at the same time because they sync up like the Wizard of Oz and Pink Floyd.
I want to sync up your act stories at the same time.
It's a lot of ums and uhs, trust me.
I want to ask you a question about axes.
Go for
it. Now that's a really smart joke.
Axe away.
Were you wearing any axe body spray at the time of your accident?
Yeah, and it was a female axe. That's why the axe came in contact with my body, because I was wearing axe. God, this is terrible.
But when you were outside, you saw... There's probably like a lot of bugs out there that have thoraxes. Is that correct?
No. No.
And your favorite...
I will say that it was an accident with the axe.
And your favorite Dr. Seuss books is The Lorax?
Yeah, okay. when I was cleaning the wound, I didn't use any Ajax on it.
Ah, that's nice. That's nice.
And also, when I watch The Warriors, I always get depressed when Ajax is arrested.
I feel like you used Ajax twice there. I don't think that counts.
No, one was a name. One was a brand name that was based on the original character that The Warriors Ajax was based off of. Now, that's meta. How's that?
Yeah, that is pretty meta. So that's everything. Also follow Mr. Frisbee on Twitter at Jason Frisbee and me at Final Parker, and be our friends on Facebook, because that's always fun. The only people I talk to are people who listen to this show on JFD, and I don't talk to any of my real friends, so be my friend on Facebook. Especially if
you can also find Rhea at RhiaMD, that's with two E's at the end, and your co-host Destiny is at FridgeBuzzNow.
Yeah.
On the Twitters, not on the Facebook.
On the Twitters, yes.
Yeah.
She doesn't believe in Facebook.
That's a belief I can get behind. I don't believe much in Facebook either these days.
Well, Facebook believes in you.
Oh, I hate that. Okay. I don't like that at all.
Well, this is Parker for Rhea and Jason, Razor Babes, Frizz Babe, and producer Muhammad saying, fuck you, Chelios. Get down, baby.
swan or a goose. Just a drake, I can dress real cute. Think I'm gonna name him Bruce. I want a new duck, not a quail or an owl. One that won't molt too much, one that won't smell too foul.
Zach, Becky's dead.